Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I get to welcome Dr. Dane Ortland to the podcast. Dr. Ortland serves as chief publishing officer and Bible publisher at Crossway in Wheaton, Illinois. Dr. Ortland, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. Great to talk with you.
Yeah, thank you for making the time. And, you know, we have been talking shop here for a few minutes before we began the formal recording. And I mean, I've just enjoyed getting to know you the past 15 minutes as a prelude to this conversation. I don't know your father well at all, but been around him some. We had the privilege of hosting him on campus here, I guess, 2 years ago for our For the Church conference. And then I've interacted with your brother, Gavin, just a touch, but not much. And, you know, loosely familiar with your brother, Eric, over at Oak Hill. But whenever I brush up against, either in person or distantly, a member of the Ortland family, I'm always encouraged. And hey, I left out your mom who came with your father here, and good grief, she was the best part of the whole bunch. And she was so sweet and charming, and my wife has been profoundly encouraged by her. So you guys have a great legacy. You really do. Of course, your grandfather. And again, I don't know the inner workings of the family, but all I know is seem healthy and happy and, you know, kind of proud in a sweet way of the heritage but cheerfully soldiering on in your own way, in your own places, in your own ministry and lay context now.
Well, thanks. I'm profoundly grateful for my dad and granddad and siblings. We are a very normal and imperfect family in most ways, but God has been so good to us. And I would not wish to have grown up in any other family.
Well, and look, your dad, you know, I do follow him on Instagram half for years, and he kind of makes everyone jealous with hunting pictures and date night pictures and his new study pictures with his wood burning fireplace. Right. And hey, I'm an evangelist for wood burning fireplace. So in the president's home here, we live on campus. It's an old historic house, which is a real treat to live in, but it has several fireplaces in it. And our family room is a wood burning fireplace. That's, you know, I guess the technical phrase might be a stove because it's got a door and you close it. And I mean, we like love that, all of us. And I mean, from, you know, basically when it's barely cold enough until it's obviously too warm, we have the fireplace going. And it's just the natural magnet for family in there. I don't have to herd them in there. They're just like, everyone goes in there. And I love everything about it. You know, I love splitting firewood in years past. I don't have as much time for that now, but I've enjoyed splitting firewood, stacking firewood, shoveling ashes. Everything about tinkering with it is a real delight. So I resonate with what appears to be your father's appreciation for wood burning stoves.
I love that. Yeah, there's something therapeutic about a fire crackling as you're reading or studying or just being a family. And so I get it.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, we're talking today about pastors as imitators. How pastors should imitate Christ's heart for his people. And look, I guess let me just set the stage a little bit more, even before we get into the topic specifically today. Can you give us a word of update on your ministry there at Crossway? And just a word of update on your family, not so much dad and siblings, but your personal family and what the Lord is doing in your life?
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Allen. I live here in Wheaton, Illinois with my wife and our five kids. 13 down to 4 are their ages. I serve here at Crossway as chief publishing officer. Been here nine, almost 10 years. Really love Crossway and working here. Serve as an elder at a local PCA church, Presbyterian church. And that's been a joy. Love the church, love the gospel, love theology, love preaching, love Midwestern and what it's about. Several good friends there. And I just rejoice, as I was saying to you offline, Dr. Allen, at the way the school has flourished under your leadership. And so thank you for your heart and life and ministry. And it's a real pleasure to speak with you today.
Well, you are so kind. Look, God has been so good here, and we're thankful for that. But do pray for us. I mean, we say daily, let's not mess this up, meaning morally, personally, but also the broader context with COVID-19, economic disruption, higher education disruption, church, local church disruption. I mean, it's just a lot of disruption, a lot of unknowns. And so people like me are working real hard to be faithful and wise and take prudential steps towards the future, but not try to drift into playing God or predicting in certain ways what the future brings to us. So as we're recording this conversation, it's April, I guess, 23rd. And, you know, so we're in the middle of COVID-19 shutdown, us meaning Midwestern Seminary, you meaning Crossway, and then more broadly, the society in general is basically shut down. So we enter this conversation about how pastors should imitate Christ's heart for his people, kind of in the middle of that ministerial contextual backdrop. Well, what we're going to talk about today is always important, but perhaps it's particularly so right now, given anxiety, given illness, given death, given uncertainty, given the always present, but perhaps particularly felt needs of God's people currently. What would you say to that?
I think it's exactly right. Always present, but particularly felt. I mean, we are acutely being forced to say, do we actually believe the theology that we confess on paper or not? It's forcing up to the surface a lot of things that were latent in us. And for a lot of us, maybe we have found we were actually banking and counting on other things. So a time like this, our hearts go out to those who are being explicitly connected to this virus and having family members in the hospital and dying and so on. But there is, in and over and around all of this, I think a salutary, healthy, to be learned from reality of us saying, okay, am I a real Christian or not? That's a good thing to go deeper into what we say we believe.
Now, the conversation today, we're going to build it in large part from your book recently, Gentle and Lowly, The Heart of Christ for Sinners and Sufferers. So I want to come to that in a moment, of course, tee you up to expound upon that and to tee you up for the broader conversation here. But, you know, I'll tell you again, in COVID-19, and even as the book is entitled and as this conversation is going, The Heart for Sinners, and, you know, I as a father and husband and, you know, treat COVID-19 seriously. I'm not panicked by it. I'm not losing sleep at night. But look, we actually have like rearranged our lives and our traffic patterns and our social activities. And we're like home, you know, and we surgically go into the store to get these items and kind of quickly remove ourselves and are mindful of how we interact with people. A part wanting to be a good citizen, a part wanting to be a good neighbor to people we're bumping up against or hopefully not bumping up against. And then a part, again, wanting to exercise wisdom as it relates to my personal health and my family's health. But in those limited interactions with at the dry cleaners, at the grocery store, at the gas station, these places where we are getting this limited interaction, I find myself saying things in the midst of those transactions, you know, like, how are you? And of course, in those conversations, oftentimes a reference to COVID-19 comes up, or oftentimes they reference some other life concern. And just saying something as simple as, you know, well, may the Lord keep you, or may the Lord bless you. Or you know, really, can I pray for you in that? It's amazing how those comments that in times past may have been taken to be little more than civilities that came out thoughtlessly. I see the look in the eyes of people, especially these clerks and store workers, where there seems to be a not only an appreciation for that, but a receptivity to it and a real desire to almost hear more. And again, trying to tee you up to talk about your book and the heart of the minister for God's people, but also for unbelievers. I guess as you look at our cultural moment and in light of the theological underpinning of your book and the conversation today, do you sense that? Are you seeing that? Are you perceiving that phenomenon in Wheaton and in other places?
Oh, very much. I agree with everything you said there, Dr. Allen. This is fertile soil for the gospel, more plowed up. People's hearts are more plowed up than they have been in the past. My six-year-old daughter and I went up and down our street a few weeks ago and dropped off with gloves on little letters saying, hey, if you would like us to run to the grocery store for you, we're glad to do that. We're the people at 406 Byron Court. Here's my wife's cell phone and my cell phone. May God be with you. That kind of thing. I would never have thought to do that, nor would she have helped me to do that in normalcy.
Right.
So this is a ripe opportunity as hearts crack open a little more than they normally are to eternal realities, for us to be creatively building bridges with those that we are, as you say, bumping up next to or not bumping up next to, that we are doing life with. It's very difficult and the anxiety is high, but there's a flip side to that, which is a real moment of opportunity.
So your book, and in light of this moment of opportunity, your book, Gentle and Lowly, How the Heart of Christ for Sinners and the Heart of Christ for Sinners and Sufferers. Like, who is your intended audience in that?
The audience is really any Christian who feels defeated in life, or whose Christian discipleship feels like running up a descending escalator often. In other words, it's for all of us. That's for me, because we are all sinners and we are all sufferers in some way. And so it's not really for, you know, skimming off the 5 or 10% most afflicted people in life. We are all moving through life in pain in different ways, in different levels of intensity. And what I want to show through this book is that Jesus is attracted, not repelled by that. He actually moves into that and towards that. That's what the Puritans have taught me. And that's just a little bit of what I wanted to try to communicate.
So in my podcast, Preaching and Preachers, our listeners tend to be local church pastors, ministers, seminary students. The listenership's by and large, those engaged in ministry or intending to be in ministry. Mm-hmm. What would you say to them specifically about their hearts?
Wow. You can have all the sound theology in the world. You can cross every T and dot every I. You can have all the degrees. And that's a wonderful thing. I love sound theology. But you can have that and miss the animating, vital center to actually who Jesus is. I would say to a pastor or a seminary student, you can build a church, grow a church on sound theology that neglects the heart of Christ. But if you do, there will be a ceiling on the beauty of your church and the beauty of your ministry, the radiance and attractiveness of your preaching and your community. But if you will tell them, as you see it in the text, expositionally, if you will tell them of the heart of God, of the heart of Christ, and if you will be not only faithful in what you say, but also attractive in how you say it, if you smell like Jesus and his heart, give people a taste of his deepest heart for sinners and sufferers, then by God's grace, you may just be part of a church for which the world has no category. And that's a glorious thing.
So when you talk about the heart of God, what do you mean by that?
Well, I don't mean anything frothy. I don't mean a liberalizing kind of emphasis on the love of God to the neglect of the wrath and justice of God. Rather, I just mean what the Bible talks about in places like Exodus 34 or Jeremiah 30 to 33, the high point of all of Jeremiah, or Lamentations 3 or Hosea or Zephaniah 3 or all over the New Testament, when it speaks of God's or Christ's heart. The Old Testament will even use the language of kidneys, his visceral, who he most deeply is, what pours out of him most naturally. And remember, I mean, we know the heart, both in Old Testament and New, is not emotions, not less than that, but it's more than that. It's your motivation headquarters. It's what gets you out of bed in the morning. So what actually, if I can put it this way, gets God out of bed in the morning? What is most deeply instinctive to him? We're not in any way threatening divine simplicity. God is not like a pie with different attributes being different sizes of slices. He is every attribute infinitely, perfectly, eternally. He is simple. But nevertheless, how does the Bible talk about God? And at times, it talks about him as having a heart that most deeply, it speaks of judgment at times being sort of his almost reluctant or strange work, whereas mercy and love and goodness and embrace being what comes most naturally to him. So that's what I'm reflecting on with the help of the Puritans.
Very well said. Again, as we mentioned, this podcast, primarily those who are in ministry or intending to be in ministry listening, but they are ministering to or intend to minister to people by the thousands and thousands and thousands who need this type of minister standing before them.
Amen.
Painting this picture of this type of God. What would you say to our listeners about how to do that in a genuine, authentic way?
Well, if their heart is not soft and drinking down this reality, then the conversation is closed. They cannot do what you just so rightly said, Dr. Allen. I mean, one way to understand preaching, I think, is preaching is God's heart, Christ's heart, flowing through a preacher's heart out to fellow sinners' hearts. People can be educated and instructed and exhorted, subtracting, bracketing out the heart of God, the heart of Christ, but they can't be changed, not really. They can crowbar their behavior into different things, but they can't be transformed from the inside out. So to sit unhurriedly with God, with an open Bible and your coffee in your hand, and over a lifetime, absorb, believe, climb into what the scripture says, Old Testament and New, about who God most deeply is. I can't imagine greater, hotter fuel for the fire of ministry than that. And so I commend that to your listeners.
You know, a period of years ago, a couple of decades now, frankly, as I was in the early stages of my ministry and exploring ministry and trying to figure my way through ministry, I heard Chuck Swindoll say something like, if you preach to broken hearts, if pastors preach to broken hearts, they will never want for a congregation. The point meaning there's far more brokenness out there, far more hunger for healing out there than we can ever imagine.
Right.
You're a younger man, you know, you're half Swindoll's age, give or take, different ministry vantage point, but experientially, I mean, have you seen that to be true? Do you share his basic assessment that pastors tend to underestimate the neediness in the pew before them?
Oh, I love that, Dr. Allen, without a doubt. I mean, we are all walking around with burdened, loaded down with a big sack of disappointments, frustrations, defeat, regions of failure. And we're shaking people's hands, not these days. We're greeting people and smiling and slathering an external appearance that everything's together over us. But we have a lot of problems, sins, failures, and anguish within us. When you minister to people, preach to people, teach people, disciple others in such a way that you are building a bridge between heaven's heart and their brokenness, you're bringing together who God and Christ actually is with our own messiness, instead of only keeping things ever at the level of summoning people up and challenging and exhorting. And there's a place for that. If all you're ever doing is giving people pep talks, I don't know how that actually changes people. But to speak to people, however well put together they may look in the pews or in the classroom, to speak to them as if they are actually profoundly feeling weak, inadequate, and broken. I come alive to that when someone teaches me or preaches to me like that, because that's me and others do too.
So in your book, you state that your focus is not centrally on what Christ has done, but who he is. Now, I think many of us probably tend to think more on the latter, not that we should, but do tend to think more what he's done, that is to say what he's accomplished for us on the cross. But you're arguing to focus on who he is, and that's really the main focus of your book. Tease right. out that contrast and why you are trying to reorient our gaze.
Well, it is a contrast, but it's not two things that can be separated, just a distinction. I mean, there's no gospel and no hope. Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary believes this, as do I, without what Christ has done, without his work. That's non-negotiable. We need to keep centering on that. I'm so thankful for the seminaries that believe and teach that. But to answer your question, we can have impeccable orthodoxy and miss what his heart is. We can have the theological skeleton of what he has done perfectly assembled, but miss the beating fleshy heart of who he is, who he is. I mean, I had seminary classes on the person of Christ and the work of Christ, and we need to keep teaching those classes. I never had a class on the heart of Christ, and that's fine. I mean, we will go haywire in our lives and ministries if we don't have a solid atonement theology and a clear grasp of the glory of justification and the Son of God is both truly human and truly divine, as the battles that were fought in the first five centuries of the church. But we will only attract people if within that skeleton there is that heart, if not only we are teaching and communicating who he is, rather what he's done, but also who he is.
Jesus, of course, said things like, you know, take my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He spoke to the gentle and lowly of heart. What did he mean when he said those things?
That is the verse, Matthew 11:29, Dr. Allen, on which this book is based and written. You know, the Puritans, of course, is, you know this, they take a single verse, they'd wring it dry, and 300 pages later, send their findings off to a publisher. One verse.
Right, right.
Thomas Goodwin wrote, "The Heart of Christ Who Is in Heaven for Sinners Who Are on Earth." That's about one third of the title. And it was based on Hebrews 4:15 about Jesus being able to sympathize with us in our weaknesses. One verse. And I love that. So this book is based on a gentle lowly, is based on Matthew 11:29, where Jesus, Spurgeon points out, there is only one place in all four Gospels where Jesus talks about his own heart. Not only one place. That's astonishing. And in that one place where he talks about his heart, the center of who he is, when he opens himself up, he does not say that he is austere and demanding in heart. He doesn't say he is judging and assessing in heart. He doesn't say he's exalted and distant in heart. He doesn't even say something like, I'm joyful and generous in heart, though there's truth to all of those. In the one place, his own surprising claim is, I am gentle and lowly. That Greek word is elsewhere in the New Testament translated humble in heart. I think what Jesus is saying there is, I am the most accessible person in the universe. I'm the most approachable person in the universe. No prerequisites. I mean, I've been watching this ESPN special on the Bulls. I grew up in Chicago on the Bulls, 97-98, The Last Dance, MJ. Love MJ. You're not going to find a bigger Jordan fan than me. But Jesus in Matthew 11:29 is basically saying, I am the opposite of what it was like to be a teammate of Michael Jordan, where you better not screw up. Make the pass, make the shot, make the minimum bar. And just the heightened anxiety that those guys testify to what it was like to play with him. They like playing with him because he won, but so much pressure. The photo negative of that is who Jesus Christ is. The one place he ever opens up and tells us what his heart is, he says, gentle and lowly in heart. What an astonishing claim. That's worth a book.
And it has a book. And so very well done. Let me pull this together with just maybe one or perhaps two final questions. What message in your book is there for the wayward Christian, whether it's the wayward layperson or the wayward pastor that in his heart of hearts is not where he should be in his affections and his pursuit of Christ?
Wow. Well, wayward can manifest itself in different ways, of course. One answer would be, if you keep on your path of waywardness, you are playing with fire and lowering the ceiling on your joy and voluntarily diminishing the eternal fruitfulness of your ministry and usefulness to the Lord. Turn, stop, change. But we can't, of course, make ourselves do that. And I think the main thing I would want to say to the wayward, whether it's layperson or pastor, is why stay on a trajectory of wandering from the Lord, given who Jesus himself claims to be in Matthew 11, which is a whole Bible truth that is simply crystallized and put in a nutshell there in Matthew 11:29. You don't need to work your way back into God's good favor. Jesus opened his arms wide on the cross, and that's still his posture. He is not looking at you with a pointed finger and crossed arms. He's looking at you with open arms. That Jesus, the Jesus of the Bible, not the junior varsity Jesus that we all tend to create in our own image, but the real Jesus standing forth in resplendent glory is gentle and lowly in heart, and he is irresistible. He's not going to scold you. He just wants you to come to him, just turn around, come to him, repent, be low before him, and he will embrace you into his deepest heart. And actually, that's a Jesus that it's enjoyable to follow.
Well said. So well said. I'm going to end on that note. Danny, thank you so much for joining me for Preaching and Preachers. I do want to commend your book to our listeners, Gentle and Lowly, The Heart of Christ for Sinners and Sufferers. Thank you for joining me on Preaching and Preachers.
A joy to do so, Dr. Allen. Thank you so much for your life and ministry.
You bet. God bless.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.